The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It is Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin.
What's up, party people?
What's up, man? Live from Bar Canada at the D here in downtown Las Vegas. Good show today. Will Hill, all his bets, JVT, co-host of VSiN Primetime, and our senior NBA analyst will talk NBA playoffs with us, what happened last night and what will happen tonight. His thoughts, Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke, back from London, England in the Crawley Town win. And Sian Najad, hosted analyst for Monumental Sports Network, will have him on. He'll talk Charles Schwab with us, and maybe we'll allow him to go off legally. On legal matters, I should say, because he was really upset with the prosecution yesterday in the Scottie Scheffler case. The fact that it's even a case.
I didn't even read the full thread.
Oh, he's mad.
He texted it to me, and I was like, just passed it on to you. I'm like, notes for tomorrow.
Kelly does that a lot. Here, check this out. Did you read it? No. Okay. We got to talk about this game first. Oh, so much to say. Celtics 133, Pacers 128 in overtime. And the Celtics take a 1-0 lead in the Eastern Conference best of seven finals. Game two will be tomorrow night back at the TD Garden there in Boston. You just take the red line to Park and then you transfer over to the green line. I think, by the way, I might be wrong about that.
Just making up things. Hey,
No.
It worked well.
I just remember in the other direction, we would go to Park and then we'd transfer over to Somerville and Medford. Okay, so here's the thing. Let's go through the specifics, and then we'll just go off on some stuff. Celtics went up 12-0 to start the game after Mazzulla successfully challenged a goaltending call 35 seconds in. That was a little no, but 12-0 Celtics out the gate. But they only led, the Celtics did, by three at the end of the first quarter, 34-31. Obi Toppin, 11 in the first quarter, was great for the Pacers. He was 5 of 6, 1 of 1 from behind the arc. The game would be tied by the half, 57 apiece, 59 apiece, 61 apiece, and then 64-64 at the half. Third quarter, Pacers took their first lead right out of the gate. They actually went up 5, 69-64, but the Celtics immediately retook the lead at 71-69. And Kelly, that's when I got in and made a Pacers money line bet at plus 256 and plus 6.5.
Okay.
At that point, Celtics got it. That was a poorly timed bet because the Celtics got it all the way back to 12, matching their biggest lead. Actually got it to 13, pardon me, at 90-77 with 4:15 left in the quarter. But, and I... You know, I've been saying this now on the run-up to this series. You will believe me when I say, at no point did I ever feel the Celtics were going to run away with this. Yeah. I'm like, 13, that'll go away. And it did. By the end of that quarter, remember, that was a 13-point lead with 4:15 left in the quarter. By the end of the quarter, it was 94-93 Celtics by one after a 14-2 Pacers run, that amazing bank three from Halliburton to end that frame. Fourth quarter, Pacers took a 95-94 lead briefly, but they'd fall back down five again, 100-95, then tied it again at 104 apiece on a Turner three, then a Brown and Horford miss led to a Siakam jumper, a Siakam steal, and a Halliburton assist to Siakam for a running jam. 108-104 Pacers with 4:33 left. They would not trail again in regulation. Sounds like they win, huh? No. By the way, so down the stretch of that game, huge Nesmith three the hard way, huge Halliburton block of a Derek White shot, a Nembhard 20-foot step back with 47 seconds left among the Pacers' highlights down the stretch. 117-114 Pacers. Then Tatum a missed three, and then the shenanigans begin. An Indiana unforced turnover where Halliburton just was careless with the basketball, bounces off God knows what part of his body.
Yeah, it even started with that Tatum missed three. Like, Nesmith sold out for, like, the steal, left a wide open three that luckily he missed.
Missed it badly. But then Indiana gives it right back. That's the first bad turnover. Then a White missed layup and a Tatum missed jumper, and the Celtics foul. So Indiana to inbounds, and Rick Carlisle, which he admits later was his mistake, does not advance the basketball. So they're inbounding from the side, not up court, and Siakam's jersey immediately gets pulled by Brown. J.J. Redick says it out loud. No call, no whistle. And then it's another Indiana horrible turnover on the Nembhard inbounds because it caroms off of Siakam out of bounds as he's, like, streaking towards the baseline.
No idea why Nembhard was impounding. No idea why they didn't take a timeout. No idea why he didn't take a timeout once he realized he had nowhere to pass the ball.
That's right. It's not like he didn't have timeouts. So just over 8 seconds left, Boston gets another reprieve. They're down three. They should have lost this three different times already. And here is where I gotta stray from everybody else. On this show, and I'm only going to bring this up, people are going to think I'm saying it to, like, chest flex or something. I'm just saying it to establish the cred. I've talked about fouling up three on this show since the dawn of time, since we've been on the air. And now I think everybody does it. So I just say that to say, this is actually one of these times where I was not upset with the Pacers not fouling down three. And I'll tell you why. It's because of how the play developed. Just over 8 seconds left, Brown is in the corner. But Siakam wasn't in position on the catch to foul him. And so you can't then just blindly, either you didn't watch how the play developed, you didn't play enough basketball to know that you can't then foul retroactively, or you're just performatively wanting to be outraged about it. But that's the least thing. I'm a guy who has the Pacers in seven. I'm very angry at the result of this game, but I wasn't pissed at that. That's not the part I'm upset about. That's the least thing. It's like, okay, sometimes, and Brown hits the biggest shot of his career. Jaylen Brown does. Sometimes it just happens that way. 117-117.
Keep preaching, man. Keep preaching.
We're going overtime. By the way, at that point, going in overtime, Indiana was 3-for-3 from the line. Boston was 17 of 23. Celtics finally take a lead 121-120 in overtime. Then Tatum with a careless turnover. He just literally throws the ball to the other team. Halliburton fouled behind the arc. He hits all three. Pacers are up by two, 123-121 with 146 left in overtime. Then it's all Celtics. Tatum three the hard way. Halliburton turnover forced by Jrue Holiday. At least this one was forced.
He was awesome.
Then a Tatum three to put the Celtics up four with 42.8 seconds left. And then Brown stole it from Siakam, and it was Katie bar the door. Celtics win at 133-128. 32 Celtics points. I can harp on the free throws. Celtics had 30 attempts. Pacers had 10. But the real story was 32 Celtics points off either 21 or 22 Pacers turnovers.
Oh, my God.
There seems to be some debate about that.
So glad you brought
this up. We didn't even talk about this.
So I heard both as well. Yeah. I've heard both as well.
So, and by the way, and the Celtics, 15 of 45 from three. What are you doing throwing up 45 threes? Okay, I just have to make this point. Now let me just say. So I split the two in-game bets. The plus points, but I lost the money line, obviously. I'm not... whatever about that. Obviously, I have the Pacers in seven, as I talked about, and you wanted, obviously, in the situation you were in, you wanted the Pacers to win that game the three, four, five times they had a chance to win it. So that was really upsetting. But I got to say this again, because I said this last year, and I want to bring this up, Kelly, and I want to bring it up respectfully as a handicapping point about the NBA specifically, which is last year, let me be clear, I didn't have the Heat to beat the Bucks. But I did have them to beat the Knicks, and I did have them to beat the Celtics, and then I stopped because I knew the Nuggets were going to crush them. But the point I made last year stands here now, which is I feel like if you're an NBA hardo, like we call our tennis hardos, I feel like if you're an NBA hardo, there is a pitfall in the NBA for handicappers that doesn't exist in other sports, that you can get so wrapped up in the numbers of the regular season that it ends up really potentially hurting you in the playoffs. And I'm going to say this after the Celtics still won that game and the Pacers lost, because I don't want to always say it in a favorable position, because I think the process means more than the actual result here. But I think the entire run-up to this game and to this series, and I'm not going to mention any names because it was everybody, when I said that I had the Pacers in seven and I had the Pacers as a puncher's chance to win this series, everyone to a man dismissed me summarily. And I tried to be as polite as possible and say, the willingness to get behind the Celtics over and over is kind of amazing to me. And I just feel like the regular season in the NBA is so much different than the postseason, right? The management of 82 games is so different. It was much more stark with the Heat because people understood, they gave their best in the playoffs. They really didn't care in the regular season.
Right.
But I do think the flip side of that is overrating the Celtics is a thing. And now I think after one game, people get that the Pacers can be very competitive in this series. By the way, when I said to people after the game yesterday, I was like, as pissed as I am, I think the Pacers get now they can win this. And I got the same thing back of, now they're really going to lose in five. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe they'll get swept. Maybe they'll lose in five. That could be the case. But I think the point remains about basketball. Remember, with baseball, it's the format.
Yeah, I think this is all fair.
The format yeah. incongruence in baseball is the problem. But I just think basketball becomes a different game.
Yeah, and I think really the teams that you're bringing up, I think specifically, are great examples with it. I mean, you brought it up, 15 for 45, a team that relies so heavily on the three. To think that they're never going to lose a game or anything, it is a little wild. I mean, I think they're a great team, but I hear. I think it's a great point. Can we just go back to the three thing real quick though?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
You agree with me?
Oh, 100. I mean, yes. I'm in shock today, Gil. I'm in shock over how I can't believe the conversations around sports media I'm waking up to of foul up three. As you said, we've been talking about this forever.
Well, before I think.
We are absolutely on team foul up three.
100%.
You had no chance to do it in that situation. What are we even talking about? It was terrible defense on the inbound. They didn't switch. So Siakam got caught up in
the
screen.
They didn't switch.
And then Siakam did the right thing. He cannot foul there. You have to let the miracle shot.
He did a great job of not fouling.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, the two turnovers before that were horrific.
Horrific.
I mean, somehow the Halliburton one gets covered up. I mean, he just dribbled the ball down the court and lost it off his foot.
So
like, he
bad.
Forgot how to dribble all of a sudden.
I was like, what am I watching? Oh, it's brutal for the Pacers.
It's a tough loss. That is a tough loss.
We're going to have a long series, though. We're going to talk about it with JVT. And, of course, the Mavericks and the T-Wolves beginning tonight the Western Conference Finals. That's next with Jonathan Montoble, Numbers Game, Visa, and the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price, normally priced at $240. That's American. You can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign it today. We'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code ANG. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, all of that at VSiN.com/subscribe. Go there today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 with promo code ANG.
The promo code, folks, is ANG. That gets you 2 months for free. Those 2 months coming out of JVT's salary. That's right.
That's what we heard. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, JVT about to join us. I just want to say one thing real quick here before we get to John, which is just following up on our conversation in the first segment. The part about the Celtics shooting 45 threes. We talk about this in football all the time on Guessing Lines. What's your betting truth serum? Like, if I have a bet, what do I want the other team to do on fourth down? That's where it usually comes up, right?
Yep.
If I'm betting against the Celtics, every time Tatum or Brown, but Tatum specifically, takes it to the rack, I'm like, oh no, this is not going to go well. Every time he shoots a three, it's a victory. Every time.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
And the other thing is, you pointed out.
Why do you think I love like Giannis and Zion so much?
Oh, yeah.
It's no thought going hard to the rim.
How are you stopping that? The other thing is, you just mentioned this off air. It is official now that Inside the NBA has one more year left on TNT.
Yeah.
As we know it, Ernie Johnson, Ernest Johnson and crew there with Shaq, Chuckster, and the Jet. And it's going to go to NBC. NBC has outbid TNT. Is that the word?
NBA finalizing media rights deal with ESPN, NBC, and Amazon.
And Amazon.
That is
so
sports business.
You'll get Round Ball Rock with John Tesh again. Here's the thing, though. This memo just in. Michael Jordan is not walking through that door. Like, 90s basketball is not actually returning. It's just the Round Ball Rock. Have you seen the video where he like tells it on the answer? He has it on his answering machine. He woke up. He dreamt it like McCartney dreamt yesterday. That's what he. That's his little story.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard that.
Anyway, the greatest studio show there ever was in any sport, which everybody else tried to mimic but never could capture the chemistry. One more year of it. JVT joins us. Jonathan Montoble. He's the co-host of VSiN Prime Time. Weekdays here at the network. And of course, he's our senior NBA analyst. He joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How about that game last night, John?
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing, actually. As somebody, and I think, Gil, I think at the very least, I know, I think you're in on this, but as somebody who's holding Indiana plus 2.5 games, would have been really nice to take one of those there. And you should have. The win probability, we can go through it, inbounding up 3 with the other team under 10 seconds, no timeouts. I think since tracking's been a thing, I think the guys at ESPN had this stat. Pacers are the first team to lose that game. So that's a brutal way to lose that thing, man.
Yeah, the stat
97%, it said, that was their win probability at that point. I would argue it's probably higher.
Probably. Yes. The stat goes back to 1997, but if you hear that at all today, it's what JVT's talking about. That's when they started tracking this stuff. So it goes back even further.
It's just, and do you agree? One of the things, Kelly and I did not talk about this before the show. I just sort of go into my rant and then he reacts to it. As upset as I was with the Halliburton turnover with just, you know, with like 40 some seconds left and the horrible Carlisle decision not to call timeout or advance the ball. And then, you know, Siakam's jersey gets tugged and Nembhard throws in a Kerem's up. Like that stuff was awful. But not fouling up 3, I just didn't think the way the play developed that they should have. And I thought Siakam did well not fouling him. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I think I would generally, like, that's a tough spot because then, of course, you foul, he hits it, then it's an N1 opportunity. What I kind of quibble with more in that scenario is why even have defenders along the interior? You know what I'm saying? Like, why not just put everybody along the perimeter, 2 guys in the corner, 2 guys on the wing, but 1 guy at the top of the key? They need a 3 there. Like, they've let them get a 2-point shot. Who cares if they do it in that instance? So I'm more of, like, because I'm with you. I think it's easy to just say, why don't you foul? Like, LeBron, I think, tweeted out, like, that's why I foul up 3 every time. but I think it's easier said than done in that situation. For me, I'm just camping my guys out along the perimeter and just going, go ahead and take a free bucket inside. We don't care. We're up 3 with less than 10 seconds left, and I believe you don't have timeouts. Like, you go ahead and try or do whatever you need to do, but we're camped out here, and we're going to be here to defend. I think that, for me, was the bigger one. Strategy-wise, there's no need to put guys along the interior and defend in there. There's no need for it at all.
That's a good point.
Gil, we didn't even bring that up in the first segment. LeBron tweeted that. Yeah. How did LeBron tweet that? He doesn't think that. There's no way he really thinks
LeBron,
that.
Mr. Foul up 3. Yeah, okay, buddy. Come on.
How are you fouling there without Jaylen Brown getting the shot off?
Last thing on this, before we get to the Mavs and the T-Wolves. Celtics are 9-point favorites again in Game 2 tomorrow night. The total's at 224.5. Are you in the, oh man, Indiana can't possibly bounce back from that kind of defeat camp? Or are you in the, oh, Indiana, even though they lost, they are going to come back in Game 2 and do to the Celtics what their previous playoff opponents did to them in Game 2s?
I mean, I don't know if it's identical to Game 2, but I don't think you're scared off of Indiana. It's not like they did anything that was completely unsustainable, I think, in that first game. You know, they only shot 35% from 3, so it's not like they went out there like Miami did in that Game 2, right? Shot 55% from 3 and took a game, or what Cleveland did in their Game 2, which was shoot over 55% from the floor, over 40% from 3. Like, they had a really good day at the rim. Pascal Siakam had a really good game, as did Tyrese Halliburton, but I didn't watch anything. I don't know about you, Gil, but I didn't watch anything last night that told me that Indiana cannot repeat a similar performance and push this team again. So
absolutely,
if somebody came into this right thinking that, like, I thought they were going to be pretty competitive in the series, I would not be scared off of Indiana in any way, shape, or form after that yesterday.
Indiana's series price adjusted to +800, 8-1 now on the comeback, down 1-0 in the East. In the West, T-Wolves -170 is where the series price has sort of settled in after sort of getting past that, now settling back a little bit. Tonight, T-Wolves favored by 4, totals 206.5. How do you see this, John?
So I think for a series perspective, I like Minnesota, and I, you know, full disclosure, I do have this futures ticket on Minnesota, but I think even just dropping in with nothing, I think that Minnesota is uniquely equipped to kind of handle this matchup. One of the things that I think is really underrated about Dallas' win over Oklahoma City is the way their role players carried them through that series. Like, Luka Doncic had a good end of the series, but Kyrie Irving was quiet. But guys, Derek Lively, when he was on the floor, the Mavericks outscored the Thunder by 71 points in that series. Yeah, Derek Jones Jr. shoot 37% from 3. Yet PJ Washington give them 17-8 on 47% shooting from 3-point range in that series. Those guys really helped them carry them along. And I think that when you look at the way that Minnesota can defend, when you have Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards for Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, when you've got smart defenders in Mike Conley, where you can put him wherever, but even if he gets switched on, it's a size mismatch, but he can still, of course, defend at a really smart level. We know what Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert can do. We know how good your bench can be. I think that this is a team that is equipped to do this. And they're not going to have to help off the defenders because they're going to trust their guys to hold up in one-on-one situations. I think that this is a quieter series for those role players for Dallas. I think that puts a lot more onus on the shoulders of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. You know, I put this in the write-up for the series. If you look at it from just an individual statistic basis, the Mavericks were one of the best isolation scoring teams in the NBA in the regular season. Makes sense. They have the best isolation scorers in the NBA. The Timberwolves were the second best isolation defense in the NBA in the regular season. They have a bunch of guys who can hold up in those situations. And I think over the course of this series, that lends itself to them winning this thing. So I think they're in a pretty good spot. I know that generally game sevens are the winners of game sevens are teams that the market would like to play against. But we saw yesterday, right? We had a winner of a game seven go in there and cover a number against the Boston Celtics. And this team's going to be at home. I would really just be on the side of Minnesota. I like them in the series. And I kind of think that they have the potential to end this pretty quickly in five or six games they play to their level on defense.
I like that. You agree that if the T-Wolves win at all, Tim Connelly pulled a fast one over all of us, and he gets to say, I don't care what y'all said about my Rudy Gobert trade. It did exactly what I thought it would.
Yeah. Well, it isn't that. So that's one of the cooler stories. And, not, you know, Rudy Gobert stuff aside, Gil, Tim Connelly was part of the front office that goes and puts together Denver.
Yes.
Denver goes and wins a championship. Then he goes to Minnesota and goes, I'm going to build a team that's somewhat similar, that's going to be better than that team, beat them, and then maybe compete for an NBA Finals once more. Like, that's incredible to see what a front office guy can do. But absolutely. And I think that, like, I was somebody, and Kelly knows this, I was in on Gobert since last year in this trade. Like, I thought it would work. I had Timberwolves futures and overs last year, and they were punching fire extinguishers and Kyle Anderson and each other and all that kind of stuff. But I do think that on the surface, when you looked at it, this could work. And now all of a sudden you're going, well, heck, I mean, it's successful. And they're in the Western Conference Finals and who knows. But I would agree, like, generally a trade that was mocked. Now you got to look at it and go, holy smokes, this is going to work for them. And by the way, that ignores all the ownership nonsense that they got to deal with.
That's right.
And everything they're going through. It's insane.
Yeah, I think I've been saying for a couple weeks now, it would be the biggest collective eating of crow for maybe you aside, but for all of us besides you. Last thing, and I want you to give a pause before you answer this. What is the NBA Finals matchup that would be most intriguing to you?
Oh, I mean, I don't have to pause, but I'll pause anyway. I think it's Minnesota and Boston. I think Minnesota-Boston would be so much fun. I mean, when you talk about the level of defense, the regular season series between these two were absolutely phenomenal. I think that the matchups, being able to see Anthony Edwards go against like a Jason Tatum type, Rudy Gobert and Kristaps Porzingis and Karl Anthony Towns and all the front courts, all the different machinations, everything that you would see between those two. And I think good home courts as well. I'd be totally down with that.
Yeah. Thank you for the performative pause, by the way. I thought that pause might make someone go, actually, you know, Minnesota, Indiana, or Dallas, Boston, something like that, but apparently not. John?
I mean, Indiana, Dallas would be incredible.
It would be incredible. thank you so much, John. Appreciate it.
Of course. Anytime.
At me, JVT, for Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of Visa Primetime with Tim Murray, weekdays here at 6 p.m. Eastern. Coming back with Sia Najad on golf next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This segment is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches. Few things are as rewarding as winning the big game, but rewards from America's number one nicotine pouch come close. Zyn Nicotine Pouches are smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free, and can be enjoyed from anywhere, anytime. It's available in a deep roster of varieties and gives you the choice of two strengths. Whether you're managing your fantasy lineup on the go, watching the game from the stands, or cheering your favorite team from the couch, you can get the nicotine satisfaction you want with Zyn. Plus, with Zyn Rewards, every can of Zyn earns you points towards premium items like tailgating gear, top-of-the-line tech, kitchen accessories, and even gift cards. In fact, it's the only nicotine pouch brand to offer an expansive reward program, with new items added seasonally. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn, Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Kelly, if I've said it once, I've said it 100 times. Some things in life are spit-free, some are hassle-free, but it's rare that they're both.
I can't even count how many times you've said that. That is true.
100, 200, who knows? Ladies and gentlemen, you will notice that our next guest never goes to a gym and is not well-groomed at all. He's Sia Najad, host and analyst for Monumental Sports Network in D.C., at Sia Najad, S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D, on the Twitter machine, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He comes to us. How you doing, Sia?
I'm doing well. I mean, listen, it feels like we're talking everything right now. We got NFL to talk about, NBA playoffs, NHL, MLB, PGA. Like, I feel like people think this is a slow time of year. It's not slow at all. I'm enthralled.
You know what else is in full throat is golf legal analysis. And I just, before you get into anything else, I want to commend you because Kelly sent me your thread yesterday, your video. First of all, I just want to get your, because you're an attorney by trade. People should know that. And this was a video of the prosecution in the Scottie Scheffler matter. I can't even call it a case. It's so ridiculous.
Yes.
Trying to argue with the judge that like there shouldn't be a delay here. It was so embarrassing, man.
It was a classic case of an attorney trying to do all the attorney things while the camera is rolling and while the lights are on. And this is like what we see. I mean, this is what I saw practicing law for 13 years as a trial attorney. I mean, I saw this so many times where attorneys are sometimes out there just to sort of prove themselves instead of get it right. They want to be right instead of get it right. And I thought this was actually truly embarrassing, especially considering, in my opinion, these charges probably should have been dropped within 48 hours of actually being levied. But the long and short of it is he was arguing against a motion to continue the arraignment by a couple of weeks, mostly due to a scheduling conflict that defense counsel had. These things are so routinely granted that they're almost never in front of a judge because counsel typically agrees to them beforehand. It was like laughable. I mean, to the extent motions to continue are not granted, it's usually when you're deep into the case and the delay is causing prejudice to the case, or if it's just completely unnecessary. But in a preliminary matter like this, things like this, like you don't waste the court's time with things like this. And the real irony here is he was trying to suggest that, hey, we don't want to treat Scottie Scheffler any different than your common everyday citizen. By actually being an antagonist to this motion, he was actually treating Scottie Scheffler differently.
Right.
Because the common person would have had this motion to continue granted right away. And oh, by the way, Gil, the provision he was arguing, the support for his argument was a misplaced provision. It was actually unbelievable. The when appropriate provision, both counsel and the judge were like, hey, this applies to remote appearances. It doesn't apply to whether the defense counsel can have a motion to continue granted. So he didn't even have like literally a leg to stand on. It was laughable. And it's part of the reason, if I'm being perfectly honest with you, this is a very small illustration because this is at the end of the day, this isn't a big deal as far as the case is concerned. It's an illustration of why I don't practice law anymore because of things like this that are so beyond ridiculous and so beyond a waste of people's time. It's just at a certain point you say to yourself, do I want to do this for the rest of my life? And the answer for me was no.
I love that. That's very honest. Three minutes of outrage with Cianajani.
That was awesome.
It literally was like the guy was going and goes, the sky is not blue. And then the defense was like, what do you mean? You know, the sky is blue. It's always blue. He goes, and then he goes to the judge. He's like, so the sky isn't blue, right? Like, it's just so ridiculous. All right, Charles Schwab, a challenge. What are you looking for here? What's the course? And in terms of what does the course dictate for where you're looking for from the golfers themselves?
Well, first of all, speaking of Scottie Scheffler, it dictates that I want to take Scottie Scheffler like out of the market entirely because he's so good. And I do think, you know, this course doesn't necessarily emphasize his strengths. I mean, his strengths are everywhere, if I'm being honest. But, you know, you could say that this course, which is a positional kind of strategic, not a plotter's course, but a strategic course where approach play and putting are really going to come into play, probably around the green a little bit as well, where off the tee is certainly minimized. You could make the argument that, well, maybe this isn't the tournament for Scottie Scheffler to win, especially coming off, you know, having a child and having this attorney stuff kind of just lingering in his head each and every day. With that said, like I'm looking for accurate players off the tee. I'm looking for guys that are dialed in with their mid irons, which I'm sure Kelly is looking for the same thing. I'm looking for some around the green play and some spike putting. I tend to look at putting a little bit more in cases like this in terms of like saving par, bogey avoidance, things of that nature. So yeah, I'm looking for guys that like are kind of down the board a little bit, but I'll say this, in the outright market, I'm betting the market that most books are offering without Scottie Scheffler. So that if Scottie Scheffler wins, my outright still have a shot. Of course, I'm taking a shot with the points there. In other words, you know, a 60-1 shot all of a sudden becomes a 45 or a 50-1 shot. I'm willing to do that to avoid the Scottie Scheffler scenario.
How many books are offering that, Sia, generally?
Yeah, I would say most of the main books offer it. I mean, like three of the sports books that I use actually offer that. They offer it in different ways where, first of all, some of them will come out with it like straight away on Monday. Some will wait until Tuesday for whatever reason. And some of them will not only offer the without Scottie Scheffler market, but they'll have another option too, where they'll offer it without Scottie Scheffler and the other top dogs like Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth. And again, that cuts down the odds considerably. I don't really delve into those markets because I do think it's the Scottie Scheffler issue that is the main thing. I'm not as worried about Jordan Spieth and Colin Morikawa. But we've come to a point now where last year this wasn't being offered at all because we didn't have the dominance that Scottie Scheffler is showcasing. But books are getting smart to the fact like people don't want to bet the outright market because Scottie Scheffler is plus 400 or less, in this case plus 275. They don't want to worry about whether Scottie Scheffler is going to run away with it on Saturday, and they're not even going to have a sweat for the last round and a half. So they're getting wise to the fact that you kind of have to offer this market too.
Makes sense. And so ergo, where did you land on the outrights?
Yeah, I landed again without Scottie Scheffler on Sepp Straka, who missed the cut at the PGA Championship, which is just fine. I mean, his upside has been showcased plenty over the last couple of months. He's shown the ability to take down a tournament. Without Scottie Scheffler in the market, I'm getting him at around 35-1. Again, I love his ability to spike. He's an accurate driver. He can be dialed in on approach and with the putting. I like Aaron Rye for the same reasons. He rates out extremely well for everybody. I see Kelly kind of nodding his head. Very accurate driver. Very good with the mid irons. The around the green and putting is okay. I would say it's about field average, but he has really shown me something over the last couple of months. The finishing positions are there, and he's got some decent course history here as well. A couple of long shots in the outright department. Again, without Scottie Scheffler, Doug Gim and Daniel Berger, both at 65-1. I'll admit the Doug Gim one is particularly shaky because I just don't think whether Scottie's in it or not, like, I don't think he has much top two equity. I don't think he has much win equity, but I'm starting to see something with his game and with the course fit where I'm like, all right, I can maybe take a dive into Doug Gim. And Daniel Berger, listen, he was injured for a long time, but the ball striking is back. He's an excellent course fit. His history here is excellent. I'm trying to get him on the upswing. So again, without the Scottie Scheffler market at 65-1, a guy that I know has the pedigree to win on this course and has the history that has won on this course, 65-1, I think that's super sneaky.
I'm smiling with the Doug Gim stuff because just sort of anecdotally watching what comes up on models, on golf models from all y'all over time, Doug Gim has to be the model, champion.
I might have got on a rant on that on this week's Long Shots, where I was like, I can't do it with Gim anymore. He's up there. It doesn't even make that much sense to me this week.
He shows up in every tournament.
It's always, approach is usually the most important stat in golf, and he is great with his irons.
Also, real quick, first round leaders, because that's where you've made your hay, Sia. What do you got there?
Yeah, and by the way, I'll say with these outrights, I have a lot of them, including Doug Gim in the top 40 market with Aaron Rye, with Daniel Berger, some long shots, CT Pan, Ben Coles in the top 40 market. I got four first round leaders for you. Sepp Straka. These are all morning wave guys, which there will be likely an advantage for the morning wave guys, as there usually is. Sepp Straka at 50-1, Christian Bezuidenhout at 50-1, Austin Eckroat at 50-1, and Aaron Rye at 55-1. Those are my four.
Okay, in top 40s, you got Rye, Berger, Gim, CT Pan, and Ben Coles as well. Okay.
Ben Coles 5,
Ben Coles 5. Sia, always a pleasure, and thank you for that legal perspective. And honestly, I felt it when you said that thing about you just wanted to get out of the profession from stuff like that. That hit hard. That's interesting. Appreciate the honesty.
Truly, it's one of many reasons, and I don't want to cast this over every single attorney. It's not like every attorney is like this, but it's stuff like this that got me out of the profession.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes total sense. Sia Nejad, everybody, at Sia Nejad, S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you.
We'll come back. We'll dive a little more into the Western Conference Finals. A Guardians update, our daily Guardians update. Ooh, it's getting interesting. Coming up, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a Numbers Game. Gil Alexander coming up. We're going to talk NFL Week 1 starting quarterback odds. But first, here's Stormy Bonatoni with your Moment of Zen.
This is your Betting Moment is In, brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches. Find your moment is in at Zyn.com. Stormy Bonantoni here with VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Time to talk Defensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL. While Alabama edge rusher Dallas Turner didn't end up the first defensive player off the board as expected in this year's draft, the consensus All-American is at the top of the board at 4-1 odds to bring home some rookie hardware to Minnesota. It was the Colts, actually, who swung first for defense at pick 15, taking a chance on Liatu Latu out of UCLA, who at one point had to medically retire from football, came back only to lead the FBS in sacks the last 2 years. Newly minted Eagle Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo at 11-1 was the only non-Power 5 player selected in the first round. Also 11-1, two-time All-American Jared Verse, who landed with the Rams, and rounding out the short shots, Dolphins rookie Chop Robinson at 13-1. This has been your Daily Moment is In. Learn more about Zyn smoke-free nicotine pouches at Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the D. Can I say on air what I said off air? My favorite VSiN promo going now is Stormy going through the different sports and being like, and that's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
So natural, as if the camera was not rolling. And she does it there again. It's fantastic.
Stormy, extremely talented.
Extremely talented. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Mark Meltzer, Melts Vegas. In case you're looking for Gil in July. Oh, he's put up a poster of a Ja Rule, Fat Joe, Slick Rick, Dougie Fresh concert. I'd like to MC one of these, please.
Vegas. Where's that at?
It is at. Thanks for asking.
Ja Rule, come on. I'm there. I'm there in a sec.
Ja
Let's go.
Rule. Ja Rule. By the way, we get a tweet from Durbin P24. He goes, Ja Rule has to mess everything up on that card, he said.
That's so funny.
I think I was on a flight once with this guy who goes, is that Ja Rule over there? I was like, it's not Ja Rule. Matthew Mayberry. Hey, Gil, do you like the Pacers in this series? I haven't heard you mention it. He says, actually, LOL, I'm with you. I bet Pacers in 7 and Celtics in 6. Love Pacers plus 2.5 games as my best bet. I'll tell you what I feel vindicated about already. Remember how I went on the rant about how ESPN ought to do better by the Pacers?
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole run up where Stephen A's like New York stand up, then the pregame show where he's giving Spike Lee a pep talk. They're doing an arrival video, for God's sakes, with the players and then Stephen A. Then at halftime, Bob Myers is talking about how OG Anunoby could only go 4.5 minutes while the Pacers are killing the Knicks. And then down the stretch, Breen Reddick and Doris Burke eulogizing the Knicks as if they've won 4 championships. Stop it. Well, Tim Legler, do you see this? Tim Legler went on with Russillo, and he says, I've been wanting to talk about the Pacers. I can't tell you how many times. I wish we had the video of how many times I want to talk about the Pacers this year, but he said it wasn't sexy enough.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Those uncomfortable meetings in the newsroom.
Yeah. All right. This is cool.
Sorry, Legs, but good job on that three-point shooting.
1996 three-point contest champion. I'm not sure
they
want
to screw up the year.
Greatest percentage of three-pointers in 1995. I'm not sure where that is. 95 bullets, by the way. Weber, Howard, Legler, George Mirishan. That's just George being George. What a team. NFL, who's playing quarterback week 1? I love these markets.
Yeah.
Team by team. Not every team. Obviously, some teams are obvious. But teams, particularly with rookie quarterbacks, pose a betting question and might trigger a bet from you. Let's go through these 1 by 1. These are courtesy of DraftKings. Nice job on them to post this. Broncos, Bo Nix -425, Jarrett Stidham +450, Zach Wilson 10-1. That's their quarterback room, Kelly. Remember, it's a room in a building. That's how NFL people talk about it now. That's their quarterback room.
That's right. Yeah.
You're not in the building or in the room. Bo Nix -425. I would not make a bet here because Sean Payton has staking his entire reputation on Bo Nix.
Yeah. I think priced correctly, though. Like, I don't know that I would be too much steeper than that, though. Like, I do think there is a slim chance that he doesn't start week 1, but it's very slim because, as you said, he's basically staked his whole reputation.
Yeah, and I'm sure.
What is this team doing?
And I'm sure Sean Payton won't be arrogant about it the whole way through. I'm sure he won't be at all.
There's almost like a part of me that wants to see the Broncos succeed so I can apologize for everything I think about them right now because, oh my God, I think this franchise is going to be a disaster for the next 5-10 years.
Don't get me started. By the way, and for those people who say, like, Sean Payton is such a quarterback whisper, I'm sorry, besides Drew Brees, can you give me the list?
Drew Brees.
Raiders, Gardner Minshew -180, Aiden O'Connell +130.
So there are a couple on here, by the way, that I would love to bet.
But this one you would? Who would you bet?
Yeah, the Raiders just brought in Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew is not starting week one for this team. After what you saw out of Aiden O'Connell last year, you're rolling it back with Aiden O'Connell week one?
I'm going to tell you the one I want to bet is the next one. The Vikings. Sam Darnold is minus 155 and J.J. McCarthy is plus 120. Now, for those who are like, well, it's got to be J.J. McCarthy. No. Apparently, the Vikings want to do everything to start Sam Darnold, barring an injury. There is even some weird talk, weird buzz out there that they have this intention to play Darnold, that they would play Darnold the whole year if it went okay. But game one, I would absolutely bet the minus 155 on Darnold. Of course, injuries could crush you here. But barring an injury, I think that's the best bet on the board.
That is so glad you brought it up before we go too crazy on this, because a couple of these I do really love. That's the big thing, right? Yes. Injuries occur. If you're betting this right now, it is May 22nd. There is a lot of practices, a lot of training camp to come where these guys can get injured. But the Vikings have basically said this is their plan all along. Like, this is why they signed Sam Darnold, right? It was to give McCarthy the time to get ready. And I guess I'd be shocked if it really ended up taking that long before McCarthy's in there playing. But week one,
minus 155 doesn't seem like too steep a price to pay there.
They've basically told everybody this is the plan.
Sometimes you have to believe what they're telling you.
That's
We are going to play Sam Darnold. Okay, that's good enough for me. Minus 155. Patriots, Jacoby Brissett is minus 300. Drake May plus 225. I think that the Patriots probably want to start Jacoby Brissett week one.
I think so, too. I think this one's properly priced, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a chance. I mean, if Drake May looks incredible for some reason in training camp, why put Brissett out there? Like, you might as well just go right away with May. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's most likely Brissett starting, like you said, but...
And then the biggest favorite of all these, the Seahawks. Geno Smith is minus 600. Sam Howell, acquired from the Washington Commanders, plus 390.
Matt Brown and I disagreed on this one, I believe.
When
he was filling in, I thought this one has moved the most. Forget what it was. It was like Geno minus 250 or something.
Yeah, I was going to say Geno's a lock here.
I was like, Geno, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't want to misquote Matt, but I believe Matt was like, well, why would they bring in Sam Howell? Like, you're bringing in Sam Howell.
But what has Geno done wrong?
I mean, I guess
why would they bring in Sam Howell?
A bit of a step back last year, but I don't think there's any plans to move on from him immediately, at least.
Well, here's the thing about all of these things. So you bring in Sam Howell, and I get the argument of why would you bring in Sam Howell? The problem with this is always, like, let's do it from a human perspective. So if they decided that they wanted to start Sam Howell week one, what happens if Sam Howell plays bad out of the gate?
Yeah, no, this is a great point.
Right? So it's like...
Teams screw themselves up so much with this stuff.
For them, it's a much better tact to just... If they have the intention, and clearly they have some intention with Sam Howell that they traded for him, if they have the intention to elevate him to QB1 at some point if Geno messes up, the way to play it is to start Geno at the beginning and let that happen, right?
Right, correct.
So
That's the way I would view it, too.
Yeah. So I think Geno Smith. We've seen
NFL teams do stupider things,
of
right?
Course
like that
have.
Makes a lot of sense to me, Gil. But
yeah, and it's not Pete Carroll anymore, so there's that.
Right.
So basically, looking at all these Broncos, Raiders, Vikings, Patriots, Seahawks, I believe the best bet is Sam Darnold. Believe it or not, with the Vikings at minus 155 to
this
start.
If this was available, I'd bet Gardner Minshew and I'd bet Sam Darnold.
Yeah. I think your confidence in Minshew is starting week one is probably correct as well. Minus 180. Again, we cannot bet these, so whatever we do, stuff that is out of state and specifically at DraftKings, which we couldn't even if it was in state, we always like to say, would we actually bet these or not? This is one of these where we actually would.
Yes.
In the case of Darnold and Minshew with the Vikings and Raiders specifically. But I do think it's Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix is correct as a $4 favorite. I think Jacoby Brissett is correct as a $3 favorite in New England. And I do think Geno's correct as a $6 favorite in Seattle. Injuries, once again, can torpedo all of this. Yep. So please don't come back if somebody breaks a leg and say, hey, you were wrong.
I feel like this is one of those, like, Hey, I know we complain about different markets being limited in and stuff like that. This is one you probably don't want to be betting heavily into anyways because of injuries.
That's right.
Like, we'd be betting them, but yes, I'm not going crazy.
But it's fun to talk about. Yeah, I mean, if they were posting an obvious team like the Jets, then they're just posting about an injury. Right.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. What has it been? At least last offseason, I want to say the offseason before DraftKings has posted these. I don't remember liking bets as much as I like these two.
We definitely talked about this last summer. Yeah. I think you're right in that memory. Jason Weingarten's on the other side. All his bets. How his trip to London was. Did he wear a coat and tie? All the burning questions next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.